Disgust is a basic human emotion, and a powerful one at that. And our next guest says the Bard himself used disgust as a powerful storytelling tool. Bradley Irish is an English professor at ASU, and his forthcoming book, Shakespeare and Disgust, The History and Science of Early Modern Revulsion, argues that Shakespeare was visionary in his use of disgust, using it in his work centuries before science proved its power. My co-host Lauren Gilger spoke with him more about it and how he became interested in a topic so, well, disgusting.
I've actually been working on disgust for well over a decade. Wow. Going back to my days as a graduate student, my first book, Emotion in the Tudor Court, explored a variety of emotions in 16th century literature, and disgust was one of them. But after writing that book, I kept having the feeling that there was more to say about the topic, and it stayed in the back of my mind. And as a scholar of early modern English, I'm always reading Shakespeare for either my teaching or my research. And in the last few years, I kept noticing how often his plays engaged with themes related to disgust. And after a while, I realized that really there was a book to be written on the subject. Modern science tells us that disgust plays an absolutely vital role in human behavior. And I think that Shakespeare intuitively recognized that because he loved to use the language and themes related to disgust throughout so many of his works. And then more broadly, one of the things that compels me to write about disgust is the fact that disgust is inherently compelling. Yeah. Scientific evidence shows that disgusting stimuli capture our attention more quickly and for longer periods of time than more emotionally neutral stimuli do. And that's because disgust fundamentally protects us from substances that might cause us harm. So we're primed to pay attention to disgusting things so that we might best avoid them. So in that sense, I guess I'm someone that just finds disgusting things inherently fascinating, as so many people apparently do.
Right, that's what I was going to say. Like, so yes, there's a protective nature of this that makes sense. But also, like, we are sort of, I think, inherently attracted to things that disgust us, right? Like, if somebody holds something up to you and says, oh my goodness, this smells so awful, you have to smell it. You're going to smell it, right? Like, we all do that. Why?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And it's something that I actually talk a little bit about in the book. It's the kind of paradox of disgust, you might want to call it. The fact that we need to pay attention to disgusting things so that we know not to engage with them, so that they don't harm us. But at the same time, the fact of the matter is that because we are compelled to pay attention to them, they draw our gaze. They invite us in. So we're simultaneously being told to pay attention to something that we're also being told to avoid. It's a really fascinating psychological mechanism.
It really is. Okay, and it sounds like Shakespeare used this to great effect. Tell us how, and give us a few examples of how you think he used disgust best in his work.
Sure. So my understanding of disgust is basically anchored in how the modern sciences theorize the emotion. And one of the things that I do find really fascinating is how Shakespeare seemed to anticipate certain things about disgust that scientists would go on to discover 400 years later. So a good example of this is the tragedy of Othello, which many people will probably be familiar with. Othello is a play about a great black general who exists in the very white world of early modern Venice. And he actually gets manipulated into murdering his wife by a jealous, envious subordinate named Iago. Now, because Othello is a racial outsider in Venice, one of the ways that Iago destroys him is by leveraging the racism of other characters. And the way that he does this is crucial. He routinely characterizes Othello with disgust-based concepts, such as associating him with foulness, with loathsomeness, and even with vomit. And what's really interesting is that modern science has performed countless experiments that demonstrate the linkage between disgust and racism and xenophobia. The theory being that for some people, the disgust system identifies those from racial or ethnic outgroups as more susceptible to carrying disease and thus being more dangerous. That's why the language of modern racism so often relies on the rhetoric of disease. People from other cultures unfortunately get associated with dirt, disease, and vermin. And Shakespeare, I think, understood this connection centuries before it was confirmed by modern scientists.
So this is often, it sounds like in Shakespeare, also about social norms, about morality, or the ways in which those two things collide.
Yes, absolutely. And really, to tell the story of that, I need to kind of explain how disgust works more generally. So scientists theorize that this human disgust system basically began as a mechanism designed to help us avoid eating toxic or pathogenic substances. And that's why the quintessential physiological response of disgust is vomiting, something that literally expels dangerous material that we may have eaten.
Yeah.
But food, of course, is not the only place where humans encounter pathogens. So disgust seems to have evolved to regulate avoidance behavior concerning all sorts of potentially dangerous things. How we react to disease, to bad hygiene, to bodily injury, certain kinds of animals, and even contact with strangers. And then what becomes even more interesting on top of that is how disgust came to protect not just our physical bodies from contaminants, but our symbolic bodies from ideas that are conceptually harmful. And that's what moral disgust is, the disgust we feel when a cherished value or a cultural norm is violated.
Yeah.
So for example, it's a very real thing to say that someone is disgusted by an act of racism, because that's true. And indeed, there's experimental evidence suggesting that when we are exposed to morally offensive ideas, our throats and stomachs will often clench up as if we were going to vomit out a literal toxin. And that's because moral disgust and physical disgust fundamentally emerge from the same psychological system, this general protection mechanism. So moral disgust is absolutely right there. And that's really, you can see it as a kind of spectrum, starting with food that we eat, going with ideas that harm us, and disgust kind of regulates over all of that.
And so is Shakespeare in his work essentially like disgusting the audience with his disgust? And that's like a cycle we're supposed to be involved in, and that gives us sort of an emotional investment in these stories?
I think that's absolutely true. So without question, Shakespeare sometimes tries to disgust his audience. In some instances, it's via imagery. Tim of Athens, for example, says that gold embalms and spices to the April day again, she whom the spittle house and ulcerous sores would cast the gorge at. In other words, money can make someone appealing who is so ugly that contaminated hospital wards and open wounds would vomit at them.
Yeah.
So when he says that, I think our stomach is definitely supposed to turn a bit.
Yeah.
But at other times, Shakespeare depicts revolting things actually happening on stage. And the play Titus Andronicus is a famous example of this. For those who don't know, it has all the extreme violence of a modern slasher film. It's so gory, in fact, that some critics historically have thought that it couldn't have been written by Shakespeare because it's beneath his supposed dignity. But it was. And in modern performances, we have all this evidence that people often faint or vomit when they watch it, or they report sleepless nights after returning home from the theater because it's so disgusting and disturbing to them. So it's a play that's definitely primed to disgust us. Yet at the same time, it was a popular play in Shakespeare's time, just as it is popular today, because as I said, things that are disgusting are often very compelling. And that's what you mentioned as well.
Another way in which Shakespeare was probably prescient.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. That is Bradley Irish, Associate Professor of English at ASU. The new book is Shakespeare and Disgust, the History and Science of Early Modern Revulsion. Bradley, thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for explaining this to us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.